Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. Section A. Pfluger sounds alarm over methane tax. Congressman joins 31 GOP colleagues in calling for repeal of provision in Inflation Reduction Act by Mella McEwen. In just a matter of weeks, oil and natural gas producers will become subject to the methane emissions tax included in last year's Inflation Reduction Act. The tax will be levied on emissions exceeding 25,000 tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, beginning with $900 per metric ton in excess of a specific threshold in 2024, rising to $1,200 in 2025 and $1,500 for 2026 and thereafter. In an effort to repeal the tax, Representative August Pfluger, whose District 11 includes much of the Permian Basin, and 31 of his Republican colleagues, wrote Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, urging them to repeal the tax before the end of the year. I am proud to advocate for the men and women of the Permian Basin who are fueling our country and our allies, Pfluger told the Reporter Telegram by email. President Biden's natural gas tax is extremely harmful for our industry and will lead to higher energy costs and inflation for all Americans. Republican leadership should use every avenue for leverage possible to repeal the natural gas tax and unleash American energy production. In their letter, the 32 Republicans noted the tax was included despite never being considered in a hearing, receiving expert testimony, and no economic analysis or examination of its efficacy. To make matters worse, the letter continued, the EPA is now proposing an overhaul of Subpart W that will drastically expand the impact of the natural gas tax established by the IRA, both in total fees paid and number of companies affected. In effect, EPA is changing the math on how the natural gas tax will be calculated to dramatically increase its cost and scope. This will have a devastating impact on many companies, which will hurt American production and drive up costs for families and businesses. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, commented to the Reporter Telegram by email, with every day Americans continuing to feel the pain from low, slow, and no growth federal policies, we join Congressman Pfluger in his efforts to repeal the natural gas tax. We should be continuing to allow the American energy industry to thrive and reduce the costs that everyday Americans are paying at the pump, turn on their heaters, or when they flip their light switches, and we hope the U.S. House and Senate take this issue up and provide relief for Americans. Shepard added, even though we were not supportive of the methane tax as originally conceived, the manipulation that is being undertaken by the EPA in its attempt to implement the tax takes the effort even further down an unsupportable path than what Congress had originally intended. We appreciate Congressman Pfluger and other members of Congress seeing that and working to actually support energy security and higher quality of life for all those in the United States. Like Shepard, Gani Sangangaliev, co-founder of ESG Dynamics, an environmental data analytics and advisory company specializing in the oil and gas sector, commended the effort to repeal the tax. But he cautioned the current political environment makes such an effort difficult at best. Given that the methane tax starts in 2024, it is imperative that producers start preparing for the inevitable implementation of the methane tax, he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. He said preparation is a tougher question because the Environmental Protection Agency is still finalizing the rules around administration of the charges, including how to determine the applicability of the tax. To be subject to the methane tax, an operator has to report over 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent. But the EPA is reviewing and altering the method that this value is calculated. These potential changes include increasing emissions factors and lowering how flare efficiency is calculated. This results in companies under the 25,000-ton hurdle being over it and qualifying for the methane tax, he wrote. Before the adjustments to Subpart W are revealed, Sangangaliev said ESG Dynamics estimated charges could reach over $600 million in 2024 and only go up from there. With the likely amendments, the charges will swell beyond those numbers, he wrote. School choice agreement far from done deal. House leaders say Democrats engaged in stalling tactics. By Robert T. Garrett and Talia Richman of the Dallas Morning News. Austin. With an assist from Governor Greg Abbott, House Republican leaders on Tuesday blamed House Democrats for slowing the chamber's work on school choice, teacher bonuses, border security, and COVID-19 vaccine requirements. Abbott said he reached an agreement on education savings accounts, but it's far from a done deal. Lieutenants to House Speaker Dade Phelan alleged that Democrats were engaged in stall tactics that could thwart its passage. It was far from clear that even with Democrats' cooperation, there was enough time remaining in the year's third special session to pass a comprehensive school finance bill. The session can't go beyond November 7th. Abbott said his agreement with the House included creating universal education savings accounts worth $10,400 a year, and increasing teacher pay, school funding, and school safety funding, as well as phasing out the STAR test that public school and charter school students take. Families could use the publicly funded ESAs to pay for private school or other education-related expenses. It's also unclear whether the escalation of partisan rhetoric, building on the House's emotional late-night debate last week of a bill letting local law enforcement detain migrants, endangers two border security bills, creating a new crime of illegal entry from a foreign nation and giving at least $1.5 billion more to Abbott's Operation Lone Star. Both measures have passed the House, but their path to Abbott's desk would be complicated should House Democrats stay away and deny the chamber a quorum to do business in coming days. Late Tuesday, three leaders of the House Democratic Caucus posted on social media that there is no quorum break. Several House Democrats issued statements accusing Republicans of trying to deflect attention from their own dysfunction, which they said has included year-long neglect of teachers and inability to agree on a voucher-like proposal. On October 5th, Abbott called the special session, saying it would be about school choice, border security, and COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Until Tuesday, he resisted pleas by Phelan and House Public Education Committee Chairman Brad Buckley, Republican Salado, that the agenda or call be expanded to items demanded by rural Republicans, who for a generation have joined most Democrats in resisting vouchers. The House's requests included items such as higher teacher pay, increased school funding, more money for campus safety, and changes to the high-stakes testing system that measures public schools' progress. Abbott had insisted the House join the Senate in passing a school choice bill, saying only then would he expand the call to include other education matters. Shortly after noon Tuesday, in separate but almost simultaneous announcements, Abbott and Buckley said they have found a way out of their impasse on education savings accounts, school funding, and accountability. But there are few details. Although Buckley said he has a committee substitute for an omnibus bill he filed October 19th, he didn't release it Tuesday. Abbott issued a press release and a proclamation expanding the session's agenda to include House-requested matters, which included teacher compensation, special education, early childhood learning, and virtual education. Abbott said his agreement with the House included creating universal education savings accounts worth $10,400 a year and increasing teacher pay, school funding, and school safety funding, as well as phasing out the STAR test that public school and charter school students take. Following productive discussions with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Phelan, Abbott said, "The Speaker and I reached an agreement on school choice for Texas families, and I am expanding the agenda for special session number 3. The governor acted as Buckley and fellow House Republicans, but not Phelan, appeared together at a press conference at which they bashed dozens of Democrats who've been absent from the chamber's floor this week, blaming the other party's caucus. The absences, along with those of numerous Republicans, denied the House a quorum on both Monday and Tuesday. That meant the chamber couldn't perform routine duties such as receiving messages from the governor. Buckley, House GOP Caucus Chairman Craig Goldman of Fort Worth, and Representative Jeff Leach of Allen said Democrats, who in 2021 broke quorum in an unsuccessful bid to block a Republican-backed election integrity bill that year, were thwarting the House's ability to function. This is a hijacking of the will of the people of Texas from our Democratic colleagues refusing to come to work," Leach said. Goldman and House Democratic Caucus Chairman Trey Martinez Fisher of San Antonio said, "It's taken Republicans too long to recognize teachers critically need a pay raise," while Goldman said an email Martinez Fisher sent Monday night ordered a quorum break by Democrats. Martinez Fisher denied doing that. The Democratic leader's email noted lawmakers have been in session much of the year and have day jobs back home and possibly family obligations for Halloween. "My impression is that attendance will also be low tomorrow, Tuesday," Martinez Fisher wrote the Democrats. "Members, I would not feel compelled to change your existing travel plans based on today's floor proceedings." The governor's announcement was light on specifics, and without a filed bill, it's unclear what exactly the proposed legislation would do for public schools. Abbott said it would include a teacher pay raise and codify other recommendations made last year by the state's Teacher Vacancy Task Force. Hitting the high notes. The Midland High Band participated Monday at the UIL Class 6A State Marching Band Championships in San Antonio. The UIL posted those teams that qualified for Tuesday's final round, and both Midland High and Odessa Permian were left off the 14-team schedule. More than 40 6A marching bands made the preliminaries, which took place Monday. The Midland High Band advanced to the state competition after finishing second in the area round October 21st. The state berth was Midland High's second straight. HEB Feast of Sharing event happens Friday in Midland, by Ben Schaefer. HEB will hold its Feast of Sharing event at the Horseshoe Pavilion November 3rd. According to HEB, the Feast of Sharing event is a series of festive gatherings that serve more than 340,000 meals at 34 dinners throughout Texas and Mexico. As recently as 2021, HEB reported distributing more than 9,000 holiday meals as part of its celebration in Midland. Last year's Feast of Sharing was the 20th. In Midland. This year, HEB's mobile kitchens will serve traditional Texas-style meals. Each event includes music, activities for families, and a variety of free services like health and wellness screenings and flu shots, according to HEB. HEB stated that their hunger relief team and Operation Appreciation Program will send holiday care packages to more than 1,000 HEB partners and U.S. military service members. Last year, HEB's hunger relief program donated 34 million pounds of food to families in need. Since 1982, the year the program was founded, HEB has donated more than 1 billion pounds of food to 5,500 nonprofit organizations in Texas and Mexico, their website states. Foundation study looks at capital bonds' impact on outcomes by Stuart Doreen. Abel Hanger Foundation officials told the Reporter-Telegram the foundation commissioned an unbiased, objective study to learn about the impact of capital investment on student success. The study, exploring the impact of school bonds from the American Institutes of Research, looked at three items: the impact on student standardized test scores, the impact on enrollment and attendance, and the impact on housing prices, according to an executive summary. How do capital expenditures for school construction or renovation impact student, teacher, and community outcomes? It asks. Impacts on student standardized test scores. The executive summary states spending on capital projects is less impactful on student test scores than spending on school operations. In a recent meta-analysis across 31 studies of the causal effects of public school spending, Jackson and McAvixius, 2021, found that marginal benefits accrued to student test scores from capital spending are about half as large as the benefits from operational spending, the executive summary states. A second point highlighted is that positive impacts on test scores take several years to materialize. For students who attend the new schools, they find positive effects on test scores after a small decline in the first year, as well as a small improvement in teacher-reported student effort, the study said of trends in California, Texas, and Ohio. Other points made include: the literature is inconsistent, as some studies find no impact on test scores. Evidence from California suggests that disadvantaged students may benefit the most from new school construction. Elementary students benefit more than high school students. Impacts on enrollment and attendance. The executive summary states two points here. First, enrollment effects are mixed for the handful of studies that measure it. Second, new school construction may boost student attendance rates, but more evidence is needed. Impacts on housing prices. The executive summary also noted capital bonds increase house prices in school districts. Cellini et al., 2010, found strong and immediate positive impacts on home prices that persist for a decade, the executive summary said. Goncalves, 2015, and Conlon and Thompson, 2017, both measured positive impacts on housing prices in Ohio. For example, Goncalves, 2015, measured a 17 to 20% increase in housing prices 4 years after the completion of school capital improvement projects, noting the housing value effects were strongest in wealthiest districts. La Fortune and Schoenholzer, 2022, estimated the LAUSD New School Initiative generated an additional $1.62 in household value for every dollar of school construction spending. Early voting in Midland County tops 10,000 by Stuart Doreen. Early voting locations. Elections Office, Midland County Annex Building, 2100 North A. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. The Village at Manor Park, Margaret Cowden Clubhouse, Sparks Great Room, 5212 Sinclair. Early voting hours for all locations, Wednesday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting ballots cast, Monday, 933, Tuesday, 1,288, Wednesday, 1,218, Thursday, 1,102, Friday, 1,626, Saturday, 1,074, Sunday, 350, Monday, 1,094, Tuesday, 1,111, mailed ballots received, 237, for a total of 10,033. Phones and MISD branding. Midland County stated Thursday there have been issues with people not putting their phones away at early voting centers. From Midland County, the use of electronic devices is prohibited within 100 feet of a vote center. If voters have their cheat sheets for voting on their phone, that information needs to be transferred to a piece of paper before coming to vote. The county also clarified information provided last week having to do with voters wearing school names or district logos on shirts or clothing. The Midland County Elections Administrator reached out to the Secretary of State Office for clarity, the district wrote. Secretary of State Office says individual school shirts and anything with the plain MISD logo is okay. Only clothing that has anything for or against the bond is prohibited. District ID badges are prohibited, the district wrote. Former Midland youth pastor charged with child pornography by Ben Schaefer. Editor's note, warning, material in the following story should be considered graphic. Corey White, a former Midland youth pastor, was charged with access with intent to view child sexual abuse materials, child pornographic materials, on October 23rd. According to a Department of Justice complaint. According to the arrest affidavit, during the week of October 9th, a Midland police officer received information that the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force members from the Nassau, New York County Police Department Special Victims Squad initiated an investigation regarding approximately 15 cyber tips from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children from 2018 to the present, involving the upload of child sexual abuse material, CSAM, videos and images via Skype from an IP address identified as a residential home in Seaford, New York, on the South Shore of Long Island. According to the arrest affidavit, a search warrant was then executed at the individual's home in New York. This resulted in the seizing of child sexual abuse materials from electronic devices. It was determined that the individual in New York was communicating with numerous adults and minors via the online video chat site Omegle. During these online interactions, according to the affidavit, the individual in New York utilized a screen sharing program to transmit CSAM videos in real time to viewers. The affidavit states that in most cases, participants were observed engaging in various sexual acts while viewing CSAM. In some instances, the faces of participants receiving CSAM were clearly visible in the screen recordings. In other instances, the affidavit states, IP addresses were visible in the Omegle chat dialog box, which was captured on screen recordings. A review of a screen recording identified as MD5831DC8EDC BB2A4D70D04F9D4B1CC162A, which was created by the individual in New York on March 16th, 2022, depicts the individual in New York sharing various CSAM videos with an adult male in his early to mid-30s utilizing internet-based electronic devices, the affidavit says. According to the arrest affidavit, an adult male in the aforementioned MD5 is observed in a sexual act while the CSAM video was playing. Through further review of the dialogue chat box captured in the MD5 mentioned above, it was observed that an adult male, later identified as Corey White, requested CSAM involving a mother and son. The individual in New York began streaming a video depicting sexual acts between an adult female and a prepubescent male. When the video began, White turned on a web camera and was fully visible on the screen. Based on this information, Midland Police Department obtained a search warrant for White's electronic devices at his residence. On October 23rd, White was detained and transported to the Midland Police Department for questioning. During questioning, according to the affidavit, White described his interest in incestuous pornographic material involving a mother and son. According to the affidavit, law enforcement confirmed that between May 8th and May 11th of this year was the last time White accessed sexually explicit materials involving children on Omegle. If convicted, White faces up to 10 years of imprisonment, up to life of supervised release, a $250,000 fine, and a $100 special assessment, the affidavit states. Officials at Redeemer Midland told the Reporter-Telegram, "Corey is no longer employed here, and we are fully cooperating with law enforcement. This is an ongoing criminal investigation, and the safety and well-being of children remains our primary concern. On the advice of legal counsel, we have no further information at this time." Odessa woman dies in collision on Highway 385. A 40-year-old Odessa woman died after a collision Saturday in Ector County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Dulce Salinas was traveling northbound on U.S. Highway 385 in a 2017 Kia Soul when the driver of a 2021 Chevrolet Silverado failed to control his speed and struck the Kia Soul from the rear. The collision caused the Silverado to roll over multiple times, and Salinas was pronounced deceased at the scene. Salinas was wearing a seatbelt. The other driver was transported to Medical Center Hospital and was listed in stable condition. The accident took place around 1:06 p.m. Saturday on U.S. 385 near Calcutta Street. Obituaries for Wednesday, November 1st. Eric Wayne Looney. Eric Wayne Looney, 87, of Midland, passed away Sunday, October 29th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 4th at Nally Pickle and Welch Rosewood Chapel. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. Eric was born April 29th, 1936, in Santo, Texas. He married Winnie Taylor in 1959, and they were married over 64 years. Survivors include his wife, Winnie, three children, Derek and wife Donna Sue, Lana Hughes, and Taylor and spouse Kelly, seven grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren, and one brother, Larry Looney. He was preceded in death by his father, Doyle Looney, his mother, Tommy Looney, and a brother, Tommy Lynn Looney. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notice. Christine Rotan. Christine Rotan of Midland passed away Sunday, October 29th. Gathering of family and friends will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, November 4th at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch, 3800 North Big Spring in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Event to honor Permian Basin veterans. Jimmy Broswell will happily tell anyone about the military service of two of his brothers. Both veterans of the Vietnam War, Broswell, the chaplain with Home Hospice, said one was a combat medic, jumping out of helicopters to help those on the field being wounded at least five separate times. The other, Broswell said, served on the front lines, walking through the jungles and having Agent Orange dropped on him as the military used the chemical to control vegetation. Upon leaving the military, Broswell said both men returned to their lives, affected in their own ways by their service. Still, just coming home was more than some got to experience. A lot of soldiers saw hellish things, and it affected them when they came home, Broswell said. Many were psychologically or physically scarred by the sacrifices they made. To honor his brothers and veterans in the Permian Basin, Broswell will be one of three speakers during the Veterans Appreciation Prayer Supper, scheduled for 5 p.m. November the 11th at the Calvary Cross. The free event is open to all veterans, as well as their one guest. It will be catered for by the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome. Investment Corporation of America CEO John Bushman, a veteran of both the Marine Corps and the United States Army, said he has wanted to host a Veterans Day event at the Calvary Cross, but concerns about parking for a large event put it on hold. Now, with a new fenced-off area, Bushman said he is excited to finally host a dinner for veterans. I have always felt much desire to honor those who are protecting me, my family, and all of us American citizens, Bushman said. These men and women have risked their lives because that's what service people do. Area veterans are asked simply to show up. No reservations needed, and Bushman said they are preparing for a large turnout. Any veteran that wants to come out with a sincere heart and accept a good meal in an environment for keeping this country safe is welcome, he said. Along with Griff Jones of Crossroads Fellowship and Frank Natas, Broswell will speak to the crowd on various topics. Erica Lane Garza is scheduled to give a musical performance. Broswell plans on speaking about security and protection and using his brothers as examples of each. As our veterans get older, he said, it's important to take time to recognize what they have given up for the country. They are no doubt a treasure to our nation, Broswell said. Quick hits. Get out and vote. Early voting continues through November the 3rd. Important election dates include November the 3rd, the last day of early voting, and November the 7th, which is Election Day, and polls open at 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Toys for Tots Kickoff Car Show. Toys for Tots has scheduled a kickoff car show from 9:15 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. November the 4th at Walk-On's, 7280 East Highway 191. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/YC7F25BH. Lunch and Learn. The Alzheimer's Association of West Texas will host a lunch and learn from noon to 2 p.m. November the 3rd at Manor Park. The lunch and learn will delve into the topics of depression, diabetes, dementia, the vulnerability that comes with aging, and ways to live a healthy lifestyle, a news release said. This event is free and open to the public. Lunch will be provided. Registration is encouraged. And register at bit.ly/3RK5BVQ. String Quartet, the Permian Basin String Quartet, will perform their first recital of the season at 7:30 p.m. Friday, November the 3rd, inside the Copper Rose Building in Odessa. The ticketed event is part of Odessa Arts and Downtown Odessa First Friday ODTX. Concert program and ticket information are available at tinyurl.com/Y23UCED5. And that's it for Quick Hits. Midland Gem and Mineral Society announces 60th annual show. The Midland Gem and Mineral Society has announced the return of its annual show, marking its 60th year, November the 4th and 5th at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street. Hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., November the 4th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on November the 5th. Celebrating the beauty and intrigue of gems, minerals, and fossils, the show will feature over 20 esteemed vendors from across the state and beyond. Attendees can expect an exquisite array of handcrafted jewelry, top-quality mineral and fossil specimens, and other breathtaking items. This family-friendly event offers a myriad of fun activities for kids, including the much-loved grab bags. A highlight of the show is the large selection of geodes, which will be cut on-site, offering attendees the thrilling experience of being the first to glimpse the hidden crystal treasures within. The Midland Gem and Mineral Society prides itself on education and engagement. Live demonstrations of lapidary, the cutting and polishing of rocks and minerals, wire wrapping, chain mail, and more will be showcased by skilled club members. In addition to these enriching experiences, attendees will have the chance to win door prizes and participate in a silent auction featuring an array of enticing items. For more information, visit the Facebook page at Midland Gem and Mineral or the website at midlandgemandmineral.org. For direct inquiries, you can email mgmstx@gmail.com or leave a message at 432-242-7057. Golden Ticket, a goodwill gesture to the community. For those who remember Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, there's a golden ticket available for Ector County residents 65 and older to get into all the Ector County ISD sporting events they want for free. Executive Director of Athletics Tracy Borchardt said the golden ticket has been in the works for about a year now. "We've had ticket sales going up and up and up with the number of people that we've had at our events and stuff, and so looking at just covering the cost of everything that we need to cover and do. I found a couple of sponsors to help us out on taking care of the little bitty things when it came to the golden ticket. Then we just decided to talk to the school board and Dr. Murray about it and roll with it. Luckily, they finally landed and we got the approvals to make sure we weren't breaking any UIL rules or anything, and we got the approval about 8 weeks ago," she added. The golden tickets were ordered, they arrived, and the district announced it. Borchardt said it takes 2 minutes to get processed for a golden ticket. She added that they came across someone who will probably save $1,000 for the school year because their grandkids play multiple sports. "They're going to things Tuesday nights, Friday nights, on the weekends. There are some people that are saving a lot of money in the long run. They also have retired educators who come out to the games." She added that ECISD averages 30 to 40 events a week, especially when you take A and B teams, grade level teams, and junior varsity and varsity squads into account. "We've had volleyball, football, tennis, swimming, cross country. All those are going on. Some of those we don't charge, but when it comes to football and things at the stadium, adult tickets at $5 is the cheapest one you can get. Football is higher. It adds up pretty fast, so hopefully some people will be able to save some money and go enjoy the games," Borchardt said. Gross athletic revenues were $621,715 in the 2022-23 year, Chief Financial Officer Deborah Ottmeyers said in an email. However, she said there are many expenses that more than offset that. Non-payroll athletic expenses alone were $2,681,702, and payroll costs are on top of that, she wrote. Non-payroll costs are things such as officials, game workers that are not employees, uniform and equipment reconditioning, supplies and uniforms, travel costs, participation fees, awards, and student insurance. Ticket revenue goes into the general fund to pay for things like electricity, game officials, and game workers. Every event is priced a little differently. Middle school events may only cost $1 or $2. Brochart said she hopes that pays for the officials. It seems like athletics should make money, but the underlying cost of so many things, you don't realize how much money we spend. Just to host an event costs so much. Transportation costs so much. We're running probably anywhere from $700,000 to $900,000 a year on transportation in town and out of town. The only way you're going to make money is if you're someone like college or the NFL. Those tickets are $100 tickets compared to our $8 ticket, $7 ticket, or $5 ticket, Brochart said. Really, as long as we have a good crowd coming in, it takes care of itself. It's pretty break-even. Officials are going up and up and up. Everything's going up higher and higher. We just know that those kids playing sports, for the most part of it, keeps them out of trouble. And the more family environment we can make it, we just want to help people out there. During an October 11th news conference, Superintendent Scott Murray said while the golden ticket will cut into revenue, it's the right thing to do, and he hopes to expand opportunities for the golden ticket over time. We're excited to be able to do this. I think from the kid perspective, we're going to see more people attending events, and so I think that'll be good for the kids. They'll enjoy that, Murray added. Along with the golden ticket, Brochart said they now live stream volleyball, basketball, and football games. We have an app that you can put on your phone. Tuesday night, we had the OHS Permian volleyball game. You can watch it on your app. Some people save money that way as well, Brochart said. She added that the golden ticket helps build relationships with people that they see all the time. Now we can kind of put a name to a face. I stay at the stadium all the time, at all the games, and so I'm able to recognize people and just remember and visit with them. That's what's fun to me, though, especially just getting to see a lot of the same people that come to the events over and over. It's been a really good thing, Brochart said. A lot of times, she says, athletes may not have someone to watch them. We have over 4,000 kids competing in sports in the district. The OHS Permian football game, that's the biggest event that we have, we had 18,000 people out there. There isn't any place else in Odessa that's going to have those kinds of numbers. It's great. It's a win-win for us, Brochart said. She said the 4,000 doesn't include elementary gymnastics or sixth grade pre-athletics. Brochart said the golden ticket has been a lot of fun these past few weeks. We've seen a lot of people come through and pick up tickets, and we're happy to see them. We want to continue doing that. And so on Tuesdays, the ticket window was open from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., and then on Wednesdays and Thursdays, the ticket window is open from 8 a.m. to 12. They can just walk right up to the window right here at the administration building and do the transaction right through the window. There's a ticket sign. They walk right up to the window, show their driver's license. We document the card, and off they go. Some people come inside the administration building. Others go to the stadium or call to see what they need to do. You may contact ECISD on the website, ectorcountyisd.org, or the athletics office at 432-456-9059 to learn more. Prochart said they have seen other districts do something similar to the Golden Ticket. Since it was their first time trying it, ECISD started spreading the word through Facebook, Twitter, and word of mouth. It speeds processes up as well, and now people don't have to just sit down and figure out how to buy a ticket. The only game that really doesn't work for us is the OHS Permian game because it's reserve seating on both sides, and I can't comp a ticket on a reserve seating type deal. The officials also cost more for that game. Officials get paid pretty well, and I understand why, because nobody wants to officiate. Nobody wants to deal with all the bad parents, all the rude, obnoxious people. We're going to make it work. Like I said, our attendance has really been doing well, and that helps with being able to offer this type of reward moving forward and making great things happen for the kids. Local news roundup. Suspect. Weekend deaths related to drug deal. One of the suspects arrested over the weekend in connection with the deaths of two teenagers told authorities their deaths were the result of a drug deal gone wrong. According to a Nectar County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a report about a gunshot victim in the 200 block of North Knox around 4 p.m. Friday, and when they arrived, they discovered a mortally wounded Kevin Adrian Roman, 18. Roman died of his injuries while in surgery. Security footage and witness accounts placed a Chrysler 300 at the scene of the incident, and it was later found with bullet holes and blood inside it, according to the report. The vehicle belonged to Ethan Gabriel Ibarra, 20, and Ibarra and his passenger, Victor Balderrama, 18, came to the sheriff's office to provide statements. According to the report, Ibarra confessed to shooting Roman during a drug deal and led authorities to Penwell, where the body of Dylan Elaine Zubia was found with at least one gunshot wound. Ibarra also admitted he disposed of two firearms. Balderrama was arrested on suspicion of two counts of tampering with a human corpse. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $75,000. Ibarra was arrested on suspicion of two counts of tampering with a human corpse and one count of murder. He remained in custody Monday on surety bonds totaling $175,000. Fentanyl overdose leads to murder charge. An 18-year-old Odessa man who admitted to selling 200 to 300 deadly fentanyl-laced pills daily is facing a murder charge in the death of a 16-year-old who died of an overdose. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call around 7:20 a.m. October the 2nd about a possible overdose in the 1200 block of Lindbergh. And when officers and paramedics arrived, they found Damian Aguilar unresponsive. Aguilar was taken to Medical Center Hospital for treatment, and a witness told officers they found the teenager sitting on the floor in his bedroom, and when they asked him if he was okay, he said no, the report stated. The witness tried to help the teen off the floor, but he lost consciousness, the report stated. The witness, who said Aguilar had overdosed on fentanyl in the past, administered Narcan and began giving him CPR. The witness told police they suspected Aguilar had overdosed on fentanyl-laced oxycodone, or M30 pills, because they'd seen him take them in the past, the report stated. Officers found 8 such pills in Aguilar's room, the report stated. The teenager was flown to Lubbock Hospital where he was declared brain dead, the report stated. He died the next day. An autopsy revealed a forensic pathologist suspected Aguilar died of a fentanyl overdose. Detectives discovered Nathaniel Martinez had supplied Aguilar with the fentanyl by searching Aguilar's phone, Instagram, and Snapchat messages and using geolocation tracking data. On Friday, officers responded to an apartment on Andrews Highway and learned Martinez needed to be taken to Medical Center Hospital. At the same time, officers found him to be in possession of 21 grams of M30 pills. On Saturday, after he was discharged from the hospital, Martinez admitted he was selling 200 to 300 M30 pills every day, and he'd sold pills to Aguilar. He also admitted he's seen 5 or 6 people suffer non-fatal overdoses, and new people can die from overdosing on fentanyl. Police used a new law that went into effect September the 1st to arrest Martinez and book him into the Ector County Jail. Martinez was arrested on suspicion of murder, manufacture, slash delivery of a controlled substance causing death, and manufacture, slash delivery of a controlled substance. He remained in the jail Monday night on surety bonds totaling $100,000. Dear Dr. Roach, for 4 years, I have been taking a 2 milligram of alprazolam at night to sleep. For the past 6 months, I have noticed that if I take it at 10:30 p.m., I usually cannot fall asleep until 2:30 a.m. Is it safe to simply stop taking this, as it has lost its effectiveness and 2 milligrams is a small dose, or should I taper off? I am 72. Dr. Roach's answer. Alprazolam, or Xanax, is a sedative in the benzodiazepine class. Recently, a research article was published highlighting the dangers of chronic use of these medications. The study was survey-based and didn't answer how often side effects can occur, but low energy, difficulty concentrating, memory loss, and anxiety were the most commonly reported side effects. The authors proposed the term benzodiazepine-induced neurological dysfunction to describe the problems chronic users may get over the long term and while tapering or discontinuing the use of these drugs. 2 milligrams of alprazolam is not a small dose. People who are not used to this dose could be highly sedated for many hours. I strongly urge you not to suddenly discontinue this dose. When I treat my own patients who want to stop diazepines, I slowly taper the dose over 6 to 10 weeks. Some people can go a bit faster, while others need more time. Since you are using the medication only at night, you can probably taper down your dose a bit faster. I also strongly recommend you discuss your plans to stop taking this drug with the doctor who has been prescribing it, although unfortunately not all physicians are aware of how dangerous long-term use can be.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.